It was a teacher of all things. It just had to be, right? Of all the professions to earn the dubious honor of being the last known victim of the Spanish Inquisition, the infamous Spanish Inquisition, it was a teacher, not a witch or a defender of Lutheranism or a converted Jew or a scientist claiming that the sun is the center of the solar system or any of the usual suspects, but a humble lower education schoolmaster from a small town in Spain who would go down in history with this unflattering distinction. But to his credit, he should be considered to be the pride and joy of those defending modern thinking. And let's see why. Now, today I am not going to delve into the history of the Spanish Inquisition because it is one of the most controversial, misunderstood, and possibly misrepresented aspects of Spanish history and quite possibly of history itself. In some ways, it's infamous because it deserves to be infamous, but it's also an extremely complex subject and will require numerous podcasts, and I promise I will, but we'll just have to wait for another day. Now, let's stick to this story. Because I've been talking about Spanish history during this period, we are talking about the 1820s during the reign of King Fernando VII, which is when this takes place. Now, one thing I will point out about the Spanish Inquisition, about the Spanish version of the Inquisition that stands out from others, was the fact that it lasted so very, very long. It was established in 1478. And was actually one of the last to be set up. And it didn't finally end, at least in this sense, until 1834. Though we will see that it's slightly more complex. We'll explain that in a second. Now, that doesn't mean it was very active throughout these 3.5 centuries. In fact, the worst of this institution took place in those early decades. And then it slowly, very slowly though, its influence and presence began to decrease. All the same, it was known to rear its ugly head from time to time, as our friend, this teacher, named Cayetano Ripoll, would sadly learn. Now, to begin with, had things been different, just slightly different, maybe his fate would have been something quite different too. In fact, in 1808, some 15 years before the story I'm going to tell you about, Napoleon took control of the government, and one of the things that they did was abolish the Inquisition because it was so backward. It was such a pernicious institution, and it had no reason to exist in modern times. In fact, it really had no reason to exist at all. But things were very different back then. And the French, after the French Revolution, had taken with them a lot of forward-thinking ideas about society, which they introduced into Spain, and one of them was getting rid of the Inquisition. Many in Spain embraced these ideas, but others didn't. One of them was King Fernando VII, who in 1814 returned to power after the French lost the Peninsular War and were forced to leave Spain. He abolished many liberal initiatives. There was a constitution that had been passed in 1812, and he also repealed the decision on the Inquisition and restored it as a working system. Now, that doesn't mean there was this reign of terror from the church, because I was telling you the Inquisition was far from being as active as what history sort of projects it to be. This was many years after it started. So it sort of was there, but for the most part, it wasn't the terror that it used to be. But still, it could wield a lot of power. Then in 1820, it was dropped again. Fernando would return to power for a third time in 1823, but this time he had to forget about bringing back the Inquisition if he wanted to stay on as king. So in theory, this should have been good news for everyone, and especially Cayetano, but once again, not everyone was happy about the news. former members of the Inquisition, for the most part, members of the church, and in fact, members of the civil administration, people who were inquisitors, sought a way to get around the problem by accepting the disappearance of the Inquisition as a formal institution, but creating what was known as boards of faith, in Spanish, juntas de la fe, which essentially were sort of extra-official mini-inquisitions, because there were many of these boards in different parts of Spain. The one we're going to look at is the Board of Faith from Valencia. Now, this would spell bad news for people like Ripoll. Ripoll was born in Catalonia, and he had fought with the Spanish during the War of Independence to get rid of the French. This is basically the Peninsular War. It's basically the same conflict. And he was taken prisoner, where he came into contact with French ideas, and in particular with some Quakers. If you think of Quakers, you might be thinking of someone like Benjamin Franklin, for example. Anyway, he learned about their theological school of thought known as deism, which may sound familiar to many of you from your days of going to history class. Deism, you may recall, is sort of a hands-off vision of God and divinity, no sort of helicopter religion. It acknowledges the existence of a God, but it views it from a rational standpoint, a God which exists through and throughout nature, but a non-interventionist God. So Catholicism, which is a highly interventionist religion, had a lot of differences with this view and naturally considered it to be heresy. Now, the fact that Ripoll may have viewed the world this way may have gone undetected or possibly ignored had it not been the fact that he was a teacher. And he was a schoolmaster in a town called Ruzafa, which was just outside of the city of Valencia. Ruzafa has since been absorbed by the city and is now a neighborhood there. And it was at this school that he was said to be passing on some of these deist ideas, maybe to staff and students, flirting big time with danger. You see, back then, the ecclesiastic sector of Spain played a huge role in education. Basically, they decided what could and couldn't be taught. In this case, Ripoll's school was a country school. It was not a parochial school, didn't belong to any religious order. But the schoolmaster who was hired needed to get the nod, the green light from the church, which he did. However, the fact that he was conceivably influencing children to stray away from what the church considered to be proper conduct, dogma, probably or definitely complicated his case even further. According to an inquisitor of Valencia named Miguel Torrazno, Ripoll did not believe in Jesus Christ, in the mystery of the Trinity, in the incarnation of God the Son, in the Holy Eucharist, in the Virgin Mary, in the Holy Gospels, in the infallibility of the Holy Catholic Church, or the Apostolic Roman Congregation. Ripoll discouraged children from reciting the Hail Mary and suggested they need not bother making the sign of the cross. According to Ripoll, it was not necessary to go to Mass in order to save one soul from damnation, and he failed to instruct them to give due reverence to the anointing of the sick and your last rites. Now, clearly, if you wanted to get into trouble with the church at the time, this was the way to do it. Ripoll was apparently a mild-mannered man, affable, well-liked in his community. He was soft-spoken and considerate. But because of these ideas, because he didn't follow traditional church procedures and dogma, finally someone, it was apparently, they say, an anonymous woman, who sort of tipped off the church that this is what he was doing and called him out. And so an investigation began. Now, it would appear that Ripoll did not enjoy all the benefits of due process of law. Some say he didn't even know what the charges against him were. This sounds dreadfully Kafkian, and I guess it could have been possible from an official standpoint. Did anyone not tell him this? But he certainly knew why he had been hauled down to the jailhouse, I'm sure. Anyway, there were four official charges. I'd be surprised he didn't know them. Maybe not, but anyway, they did exist. These were substituting words from official prayers, especially the Hail Mary, not going to Mass or encouraging students to go to Mass, not showing proper respect for particular religious ceremonies, and eating meat on Good Friday, which was also a big no-no. Now, you can see why this might have ruffled feathers back then, but there is a big difference between that and being put to death. Ripoll was arrested on September 29th, 1824, and for 2 years he was held in captivity until the sentence was handed down. It's also been claimed that he was never afforded any legal defense, nor did he have a chance to defend himself in court. And after he was condemned to death, no plea for mercy or clemency was ever requested. It is true that he had no intention of changing his mind or changing his opinion, for his own benefit. Now, he almost got away with everything on a technicality. When they asked for his baptismal certificate, at first none could be found, and that led to the possibility that he had never been christened and therefore was not a Christian, meaning that they could not try him for heresy in a church court. But finally, it was located in his hometown of Solsona in Catalonia. And as one person put it, the finding of his birth certificate soon turned into his certificate of death. He was condemned to death, and the civil authorities carried out the order because this was not something that a religious court could do, and they had him hanged. This took place on July 26, 1826. This in itself was controversial, for a number of reasons, not just for the fact that they were executing him, but the church members were in favor of having him burned at the stake. There was more to this than this possible perversity. Burning at the stake meant the total consumption of what was considered to be a corrupt soul. So burning at the stake was sort of a process of purification. But for a long time now, this form of executing people had been considered to be a horrible, inhumane way of taking one's life. If anything, those who were executed previously were often killed first and then maybe put into the fire, but they were put into the fire when they were already dead. So this did not happen to Ripoll, and making some uneasy about it. It was claimed, or it has been claimed, that his coffin that he was put in had flames painted on it for symbolic reasons, so that when he was put into the ground, it sort of meant that his body was being consumed by fire. So at least they could cover that part of it. But to be honest, just what happened to his body is not 100% known, but it is most likely believed that it was put in a plot either in the general cemetery of Valencia or in another one across the street, where apparently there is a British cemetery today, a Protestant cemetery. News of the trial and execution made international headlines. Some of the news was sensationalized and based on rumors, so it wasn't always very accurate. But the fact that a peaceful individual was going to lose his life for his religious beliefs stupefied much of Europe, and there were some efforts made to have the authorities of Valencia reconsider, but they obviously failed. So in the end, Ripoll ended up being the last victim of the, I'm going to put this quote unquote, Inquisition. And I say that because it's important to be accurate in this assessment, because it's not entirely true. The Inquisition as an institution did not condemn Ripoll to death. It was the Board of Faith. The Inquisition officially did not exist anymore. the last person to be condemned by the Spanish Inquisition as a heretic, believe it or not, was a blind woman. You heard right. She was blind from the time when she was 12 years old. Her name was María de los Dolores López, and she was executed by way of a system called the Garrote Vil, and her body was burned at the stake. This was all the way back in 1781, and that is another story in itself. Now, like so many other cases involving the Inquisition, Ripoll could have saved his life, his hide, by recanting and embracing Catholic dogma, but he didn't believe in it and refused to betray his own beliefs. A free thinker and one ready to stand by his principles, even if it meant dying for them. So more than just the last victim of an outdated and reactionary system, he should be seen as a victim for defending the rights that today we consider to be fundamental to a healthy society. And we'll stop there for today. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast by Brian Spaindemain. Please feel free to leave us any comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spaindemain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.